Yeah, so I got a text here.
You got from a text? You. From me?
Well, thank you.
Ooh, there's a doppelganger?
It says, "Hi, Patrick, I need a favor from you. Text me back when you get my message. Dash, Pastor David Bowser."
That's how I sign off all my messages, don't you know that?
And you're in my phone already, so I know this is not you.
So plus, he got a burner.
I responded.
Yeah, obviously, I got a burner phone.
To text Patrick. I've got some questions.
Yeah, I responded. Thank goodness you texted me. We have an emergency up at the church. There's bats in the chapel. I will let you know.
Let us know what happens with these bats in the chapel.
All right, well, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How we doing, Patrick?
Excellent. And Elise McCarter.
Still here. Still pretty successful.
Today on the podcast, we're going to be talking about pastors.
Okay.
Yes. Qualifications of pastors.
I'm one of those.
Yes. We've got an editorial here from Religion News Service. I'll leave it there.
Editorial about pastors.
Yes.
I like it already. But or maybe I don't. I don't know. It's hard to say.
But before we get there, are you familiar with Lifetime, the channel?
The Lifetime Network?
Yeah, the Lifetime Network.
I have flipped past it many a time.
Yes.
Sure.
Have you ever... It's like lots of like court cases of women who were abused by stuff and things, right? Like,
No. This is the Big City Decorator.
Okay.
Elise is...
Okay. This is a formula.
I don't know why you were like, let me give my opinion. Yeah. Elise obviously has...
Yes.
Knows some stuff.
Well, let's have it.
Interior designer from the big city gets divorced, moves home to small town.
Sure.
To heal, ends up finding love
with
the local baker.
Wonderful, of course.
Sure.
Over
so,
Christmas time or the backdrop of a holiday.
Sure. Okay. So that's Lifetime. That's also probably Hallmark Channel. Mm-hmm. I would say Hallmark is probably a little sweeter than maybe Lifetime.
Yeah.
Lifetime, there's a 50% chance
that a murder
is going to happen.
Yeah, it could go either way.
Same plot line with
love
or without
murder.
A murder. Right.
All right.
Or both. Right. Sometimes love leads to murder.
Sometimes a headline just pops out of you that you're like, we need to discuss this on all things. Okay, Mario Lopez. Are you familiar? Do you know who Mario Lopez
is? Yeah, he played Slater on...
Slater on Saved by the Bell. Mario Lopez will play Colonel Sanders in KFC Lifetime original movie, A Recipe for Seduction.
So Mario Lopez, I have a hard time envisioning Mario Lopez as Colonel Sanders.
All right, let me pull up a picture here.
I don't
think it helps. No, I've seen it.
Listeners, just
hold on a
with
minute.
This.
It'll be worth it.
The big reveal of me looking at a picture. That what?
It's like Miami Vice meets Colonel Sanders.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna say Colonel Sanders is ripped.
He's ripped. He's got some of that. What's it when you got like just a little flecks of gray? What's
a little
that
salt
called?
And pepper.
Yeah. Salt and pepper. Yeah, he's got a little of that going on.
The Wendy's signage, or it's not Wendy's, it's KFC. KFC signage does not do him justice if that is accurate.
It's like Miami Vice meets Gone with the Wind meets Colonel Sanders. That's the vibe that I'm getting from that picture that I just saw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if that doesn't give you an image, listeners, I don't know what will. Mm. I mean.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to say I have a lot of places to go with this story because
I don't think we need to go anywhere.
There's not a ton of this. Yeah. But I will say Mario Lopez, he looks pretty good as Colonel Sanders. You know, like I'm going to say.
He looks good with salt and pepper hair. Let's stop pretending like he looks like Colonel Sanders.
No, he does not look like Colonel Sanders. But the question is, why?
Yeah.
Why does this exist? Who came up with it? Was this a KFC idea, a Lifetime idea? Which one of those companies contacted each other?
Well, you've got to
think about
this,
a natural partnership.
KFC is the same company who thought, you know what would make our chicken sandwich better? Let's get rid of the bread and use chicken in place of the bread. Let's just put chicken on the... this is the company that we're talking about. So I have zero surprise for me that they also came up with, you know what would make our brand better? Let's make a romance movie about our... beloved Southern Colonel.
General Sanders.
Our beloved Southern Colonel.
Yeah.
And his romantic interest with, I don't know, some other lady.
Yes.
Mrs. Sanders, I assume, right?
I don't know. I have no idea.
This is not past the Bechdel test.
Yeah, probably not. This is not past, whatever art test is out there. This will fail it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they also have a bowl where it's just like chicken and they just throw mashed potatoes and corn in there. It's just like, take everything we've got, throw it in a bowl and mix it up and
delicious.
Just go on your way.
And is my, day after Thanksgiving meal every year. Mm-hmm. Like, it's fantastic. Yep. I have no complaints there. But that's the level of highfalutin thinking that we've got going on at the KFC organization. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that we can be surprised that this is what they came up with.
Let me ask you, are there any other fast food mascots
my goodness.
That you would want to see,
I want to see
in a romance movie?
I want to see Wendy with Colonel Sanders.
Okay, spin-off here.
I want to see that romance.
This may be star-crossed lovers here.
Yes.
Colonel Sanders.
Torn apart by their rival companies and yet brought together by love. That's the story that I want to see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Ronald McDonald can preside at the wedding.
Sure.
Obviously, sure. He's got an online officiants thing, license. Yeah.
Okay. I would like to see a redemption arc where the Taco Bell is actually the Liberty Bell.
Ooh. Okay.
Or maybe the dog can come back, the Chihuahua, for a romance. Yes. Maybe
for a little extra slightly racist implication there. Yeah, sure.
Think outside the heart, you know.
Uh-huh.
They're mascots. So.
Yeah.
Think outside the bun, yes.
But the Burger King is like just stuck outside. Sad and alone.
Maybe a Burger King Dairy Queen, you know, movie. You know, so
a royalty.
You know,
Lifetime.
The Crown is big right now on Netflix.
Is there any mascot you wouldn't want to see?
That's a good question. So, I mean, when I was a kid, McDonald's had a ton of mascots.
Sure, it was like not just Hamburglar and the purple. Who's the purple
Grimace?
Guy.
Grimace, Mayor McCheese. Yeah, and those all have gone kind of to the trash bin of history.
We've seen enough of McDonald's mascots already.
Sure.
That's true. Yeah. I think they actually had a TV show of McDonald's mascots.
Probably.
I think so. I mean, that seems like something McDonald's would do. I can't speak to the quality of it, but I'm sure it was bad.
Yeah. I guess like Carl's Jr.'s mascot movie would be.
The Little Star?
Yes.
Yeah.
Would it just be the
rated
more you...
for adults only.
Let me tell you which mascot I don't want to see. The Jack in the Box guy.
Oh, yeah. I don't want to see him.
I'm over it.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. We don't need him.
You already did Thanksgiving with him. So.
That's true. Yeah, I don't need Valentine's Day. I've already done Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
All right, let's get on to our editorial about pastors. Enough of this mascot business. I want to talk about important things.
Pastors. Yeah, I'm not sure this will get more and more important here. I'm going to give you the headline here from religionnews.com. We've used them before.
We have?
Yeah.
Okay.
Carl Lentz and the hot pastor problem.
First of all, is it a problem?
That's a good question. So let me ask you.
It appeared to be a problem for Mr. Lentz.
But let me ask you, do you know who Carl Lentz is?
I do.
Yeah.
Okay, so Carl Lentz is pastor of Hillsong Church in New York City. So I think Hillsong as a global church organization.
I believe it's branded Hillsong NYC.
Yes, okay.
Mm-hmm. Just to be clear.
But I believe that they started in Australia,
yeah.
and they have campuses all around
Worldwide phenomenon. Yeah. Yes.
And Carl Lentz was the pastor, or one of the pastors, of their New York City location. And he is a pretty famous celebrity pastor. So, mm-hmm. and not only a pastor that's a celebrity, but also two celebrities.
Yes.
They're
famously baptized the Biebs.
Yes, Justin Bieber. Kevin Durant, mm-hmm. Selena Gomez,
Kardashians.
Some Kardashians. Yeah. So he is in with the in crowd.
Sure.
So
I am not.
You might be.
Just to be clear,
you know what?
I have never baptized Justin Bieber, just so we're all clear.
You are in our in crowd.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah. I've not baptized any of you either. That's kind of sad.
You baptized my kid.
I did do that.
Yeah,
I was
my
baptized
kid too.
As a baby.
Sure. And my kid might be the next Justin Bieber. We don't
know. Yeah, I mean...
Sure.
Probably not. But.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, Justin
Bieber...
Doesn't
seem like that's a likely path for him, given you're in Kat's, you know, general parenting styles. It doesn't
Yikes.
Seem like he's going to...
Okay.
Wow, what are you saying?
I think that's a compliment. I really intended that as a good thing. I don't know.
So anyway. So Carl Lentz recently on Instagram posted mm-hmm. that he has been dismissed from his role as pastor mm-hmm. at Hillsong due to his having an affair mm-hmm. and cheating on his wife.
And other not-so-great activities while the pastor.
Yeah, they called it, what did they say, moral failure?
Moral failure.
I believe that is the Hillsong Global whatever guy said something like that. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. So they are fine to cut ties with Carl Lentz.
Mm-hmm.
But Carl Lentz is a hot pastor. What do you think?
Is this Patrick's definition? Is this?
I mean, this is like the idea.
So
like...
me being the only civilian in the room, my opinion is the only one that matters.
Yes.
Well, you're also the only one in the room currently attracted to men, so that probably helps. Yeah,
it does.
Yeah.
Not that I can't look at another man and admit their beauty.
Sure.
We'll talk about it later.
He's an attractive guy. He's got the chiseled jawline.
He was asking me.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, he's fine.
He's an attractive guy.
I will say. This whole vibe with, like, the shaved sides of the head and the funky glasses and the rolled-up sleeves just makes me feel like you care a lot about yourself.
Yes. He's a hip. He's not just an attractive guy who's also a pastor. He wants to be the hot pastor.
This is an important distinction.
Yes.
I think somebody can be physically attractive, but this is a level to where I am not attracted to you.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Because of your persona.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right.
So as the only and therefore hottest pastor on this podcast.
Pastor David, the hot pastor. Right. Yeah. On Sunday.
Bringing you the hot
pastor. I have no other input. I just thought that was a funny joke to make.
Well, this is like Schrodinger's pastor, right? Because you're the only pastor here. So you're both the hot pastor and
the ugly pastor.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm the best and the worst.
Yes.
Yeah. This is basically my nightly like nightmare scenario is realizing that I am
if you're
the best
still listening
of, like, all
you,
the things
I thought you were going to say that's like your daily affirmation. Okay. No. I'm here. The best and I am the worst.
If for some
very Luther affirmation.
Right. If for some reason you're still listening, this is actually not actually about hot celebrity pastors.
Oh, okay. Well, let's talk about something else then.
Well, I'm going to head out.
Not, I'll read you the introduction here. For how much the Bible tells us what Jesus said and what he meant, it's strikingly how little it tells us about his appearance.
Mm-hmm.
Based on his ethnicity and birthplace, he was almost certainly brown skin,
yep.
Dark eyes and hair.
More than likely.
Had a beard.
Probably.
Probably. And the only comment on the Messiah's looks comes from the biblical prophet Isaiah, who Christians believe foretold Jesus' arrival in Israel. He said he had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. Translation, Jesus of Nazareth wasn't hot.
There you go.
Okay, so what do we think here about that? This first her introduction here by the author.
Well, I would just offer clarity. Isaiah was prophesying about a future Messiah. Mm-hmm. Isaiah was not describing the physical person of Jesus.
Yeah.
And so I don't know that I would use that as a point of evidence for Jesus's attractiveness or not attractiveness.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that we have historically, if you look through artwork and things like that, I think Jesus has often been depicted using our current understanding of beauty in the age in which that is being depicted. Right. So if you look at Jesus in the Romantic era paintings, he's going to be depicted as attractive by Romantic era standards, and so on and so forth throughout And so I don't think that we have necessarily held to that, but I don't know. I have no evidence one way or the other to describe Jesus's physical appearance.
Yeah, I mean, think of every movie I've seen with Jesus, you know, so a tangible physical person playing the role of Jesus, they're often attractive people.
I mean, they're already an actor in Hollywood.
Yes, which, right. Yes.
Yeah, you know.
That's already
But we never really get, like, kind of a chubby Jesus. You don't really get that.
I would
that.
Love to see that iteration.
Yeah.
We started GoFundMe.
Sure. Yeah, it's Beyond Sunday Presents.
Yeah.
Chubby Jesus.
Chubby Jesus, yeah. You don't really see that. And, you know, probably, you know, I don't know. For what it is, he walked around a lot, so you know, he's getting in his steps.
Yeah, he's definitely in it, and you know, probably a kosher diet, so lots of relatively healthy things.
He's fasting, you know, we know this about him, so you know, he's doing all these things. So, but I think this is interesting here because I think, and we're going to kind of skim over some of this this article here and kind of use it as a jumping off point when we think of quality church leadership or who are leaders in the church community that we're drawn to. I'm not saying we're drawn to hot church leaders or hot thinkers or things like that.
Hot thinkers.
Huh? What's that?
Hot thinkers.
Yes.
That threw me.
Okay, hot authors, yes. But what do you think are the attributes of some of these like that draw people in to want to follow, listen, be kind of connect to?
Yeah, I think it might be helpful even to look at kind of the political arena here for a moment. I think that there's a level of attractiveness that is expected of political candidates. We'll just say. And, you know, I think that's something that we've kind of seen throughout. And you always are getting comments about people's physical appearance, particularly as we've seen women make a move into that. There's you know, been a lot of critique, good and bad, of women's physical appearance in that role and how they present themselves in those roles. And so I think that we are always, consciously or unconsciously, judging people based on their appearance.
For sure.
I mean, we see somebody and we're making a judgment based on, are they clean shaven or are they not? Do they have long hair or not? Do they look put together or do they not? Do they look like they have money or do they not? Right? We're making all those judgments based on appearance already. I don't think that's necessarily healthy, especially if we let that go unchecked.
Uh-huh.
But I think it's happening all around us.
Yeah.
I just feel like that's worth realizing. This is not,
I think, you know, in the context of like the hot pastor thing, I think we're really talking about charisma.
Mm.
But I think charisma for humans is intertwined with physical appearance. But to me, that kind of begs the question of, what is it about us that wants to give hot people things, you know, like whether that be a pass or a position or whatever, you know, what about somebody being attractive or charismatic wants us to give them advantages, you know?
Yeah, I think that charisma is a great point, because I think we do often look to somebody with charisma and assume, oh, well, that person's gonna be a great leader because they're they've got a glint in their eye, or they've got a way of speaking that you know, attracts you to that, or that draws you in, right? And so they're gonna be like this great leader. There was this experiment, social experiment that was being done down in somewhere in South America, I forget where, but essentially, they were trying a new form of elections, and they were doing it amongst a student body, a student government system, where essentially the election was that people's names were drawn out of a hat for all these different positions. And so the election became completely random based on the group of people that were interested in being a part of this process. So you didn't just have everybody voting for the popular kid. You had everybody who wanted to be put in their names, and then somebody was drawn out. And they found that they were actually much more productive meetings when they had this much more diverse group of leaders who were lifted up in this student body, because it wasn't just people looking and say, oh, well, this person speaks well. You know, the person who speaks well, especially in high school, right? The person who speaks well doesn't mean that they know anything about being a leader, or the person who gets you hyped up and says the right joke doesn't mean they know how to help move something through a school board or anything like that. And I think the same thing is true for pastoral leadership, right? The person who speaks the best or looks the nicest or wears the right clothes or sings the right song doesn't necessarily point to Jesus the most effectively.
Yeah, 100%. And I want to take some steps back, because I think there's a lot of amazing and great things in there that I want to explore a little further. Sure. First, this idea of, like, as we have people enter the public arena in politics or TV or whatever, one, we have a double standard. And, you know, we can acknowledge that an unattractive guy can make up for that by being funny, intelligent, kind of have a good way of communicating, and then it's not really held against him. But it's undeniable that for a woman who would be unattractive to the general public, funniness, charisma, you know, being well-spoken aren't really gonna get her over the hump, so to speak, as easily as a man in those situations.
Yeah. That's outside of the political arena.
That's outside. That's like that's life. Yeah, and so, you know, probably, and if we want to say in the public arena, that's probably the same in the church arena, too. We may have the same issues that there's a baseline of beauty that we expect a female leader to possess.
Yeah, I mean, you can even think about the dad bod standard, right? Sure. That, like, you know, this is not a fad anymore, but this was big a couple years ago.
It's still a thing.
That's still a thing? Okay. Yeah, so, like, you know, dads are, dads let themselves go a little bit. Dads, you know, have a little bit of a gut, but they kind of work out sometimes and, you know, whatever. And dads get a pass on this, and women do not.
Yeah.
Women just don't get that
the
same pass.
The mom bod is not the same level of attractiveness,
as the dad bod, Right. Yeah, and I think this other idea of, like, well, we just kind of sum that up as kind of charisma is interesting, too. I think even one could argue, like, since we started putting presidential debates on television, really the most charismatic candidate has won every time, regardless of party. I think you could make that argument. That's just kind of what we expect. You know, the person who is more compelling, more interesting, who knows how to utilize the media that they're working with, is just much more intriguing to the general public than their actual answers on issues. That's just kind of maybe the baseline, and maybe we might even say 2020. This past election maybe have been the inverse of that. You know, that Joe Biden may not have been the most charismatic of speakers or things like that, but by nature of being not Donald Trump, I think maybe a lot of people out wanted to vote for him. So I do think that, you know, if we look back, almost always it's kind of just the person who's a little more fun to listen to. You may hate listening to them, but the person who just knows how to talk to the audience does a little bit better.
This happens in pastoral leadership, too. I mean, there are a lot of pastors that I know that are great preachers. That does not make them great all-around pastors, right? Being a great preacher in front of 100 or 1,000 people doesn't make you great at someone's bedside when they're dying.
Yes.
Or doesn't make you a great Bible study teacher, or doesn't make you a great council leader who knows how to look at budgets and, you know, think about finances and that. Like, but we assume, oh, they're a great preacher. They must be this must be great, and we want to be a part of that, and we're drawn to that. And pastors are often judged on your preaching alone.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, for, I don't know, 70-80% of the congregation, your preaching is all they ever see of you.
Yes.
And, you know.
Oh, that's a really good point. I was just thinking in the context of mega churches, too, which is, Hillsong definitely qualifies as a mega church. I feel like it's really easy to boil down the performance of a pastor to a performance. You know, like on Sunday morning, you come in, it's basically like going to a concert. You're going to go hear, you know, your pastor speak. I think that's really interesting to think about pastoral leadership in that way versus what, I mean, you know, it is obviously it's a lot more than just an hour on Sunday morning. And I feel like that performance aspect doesn't translate necessarily to actually serving a congregation.
Yeah. And I mean, attractive people can be pastors, right? God, God can use attractive people. And there's certainly an element of, hey, you know, Bieber and Kevin Durant and these others, right? We want them to know the gospel of Jesus Christ as much as anybody. And if to get into that circle, you need to have a certain level of attractiveness to get into that circle,
first
then...
First of all, gross.
Right, I mean...
Continue, yeah.
Gross, but, you know, Paul...
reality.
Yes. Yeah, right. Reality. And Paul becomes, you know, what Paul needs to get into different circles in order to proclaim Christ, right? Yep. I mean, Paul does a level of this, too. And so... I think the danger there, and I don't want to speak for Carl Lentz, and I pray for his family and for his own sanity during this process. I'm sure it's very difficult, but I think the danger is that when you let yourself into this circle that's valuing this attractiveness, physical beauty, whatever, above other things, and that's how you've managed to get into there, I think you're at a danger of falling into the kinds of places that he has found himself. And I think other pastors have certainly found themselves.
Sure.
Out there. You know, we were joking off the podcast earlier about people who chase, what was it?
Chalice chasers. Yes.
People who, you know, women who try to get priests to leave the priesthood, right? Because I think, you know, you see there are priests who are young, who are attractive, who are male, and they become desirable to people, and it's a threshold for temptation. It's a huge, I mean, there are so many movies about the priest who falls in love with whatever, because it's an obvious threshold that we're all aware of, that that's, it's a temptation that's out there. And I don't want to say it's a temptation only for people with certain attractive attributes, but it's a, I think it's heightened when you're, I think you said it well, Patrick, when you started, right? When you're trying, when you want to be attractive, right?
Yes.
Some people are just attractive, and that's just the way they exist in the world, right? Patrick is a fine-looking man, and he, but he clearly doesn't care that he's a fine-looking man, because he doesn't, yeah, I don't know.
Wait, getting
it's just obvious that he doesn't care.
Look, look, I tried out for seminary, and they said, look, you're just too darn hot.
Just too hot.
Yes. We can't let you in. You're going to be a stumbling block.
Yes, it's I'm sorry. You're just, it's, that's what it is.
Except they wouldn't say that to you because you're not a woman. So you can't
that's
be a
true.
Stumbling
yeah.
block.
Right. Well, I think you know, this does bring up a point of, like, you kind of mentioned using attractiveness. Last week we covered a story in the Bible where Esther was able to convince the king to spare her people because she's pretty.
Yep.
Like, because she won a beauty contest.
Right.
Like, that's why she was in that position.
She hashtag woke up like this.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No filter. Yes. Yeah. So that happens. You know, we see that. So that's not something that's unique to this culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's thousands of years ago in a completely different part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
That was happening. And it's going to be happening all around the world as we speak. So there could be this allure or attraction to those things. But I think what's interesting, and maybe we can use this kind of to point to scripture here, the Bible does give us qualifications of what a leader in the church should be.
Yeah.
And Pastor David, you were hitting on this. Like, none of those qualifications are charismatic.
Nope.
Yeah.
Funny. Good communicator.
Nope.
Great speaker.
Yeah.
Able to unpack the letters and scripture in the Bible in a relatable way for the audience. None of those things matter to the biblical leaders of the time. Not one of them. In fact, probably the things that Paul lays out for biblical leaders, we would kind of say, like, it's important, but it's not really why I go to the church I go to. Because my pastor is a good financial steward. Because my pastor is humble.
Right.
Because my pastor is not prone to anger. Those are not the things where, like, yeah, you know, I really love that about my pastor. He's just not prone to anger.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, how often do we interview pastors for their character? You know, like, you, like, when you interview a pastor, you say, okay, what is their preaching like? You know, what is their prayer like? You know, what is their experience level? It's not like, who is he as a person or she, you know, who is he or she as a person?
Or really what it comes down to it is, like, how does this person make me feel?
Right.
Like, that's really probably what it comes down to. How do I feel when I speak to them, when I hear them, their words? And as you mentioned, Pastor David, really 70-80% of the congregation, and in a mega church, maybe 100% of the congregation, only gets to hear their upfront preaching or speaking.
Yeah.
So if that's it, it's like, well, that's everything we put, all this thing on pastors, all this weight of like, that's what you got to be. Yeah. You got to be that Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. And if you're not that, then you're not going to be very effective at this position. Regardless, that's not really what the Bible says that position is.
Yeah. And that number is like probably much closer to 100% of guests and visitors who walk in, right?
Sure.
Most guests and visitors are not walking in because they're in the hospital and they need someone to come and see them, right? They're walking in on a Sunday morning, or they're, you know, tuning in on Sunday morning on your website. And that's the only thing they're going to see of you and of your church is those few moments. And, yeah, hopefully they have great interactions with other people because you've trained up people to welcome others and that sort of thing. That's all part of it. But, we intentionally or unintentionally, we've put the emphasis in a place where I don't know that it's always resulting in the best leadership.
Sure.
I mean, I think it would be a fascinating experiment. They've done this in the corporate world. I don't know that we've done it in the church, but I think it would be a fascinating experiment to give call committees. Those are the teams of people who call a pastor to a congregation. Give call committees just slates of candidates with no biographical information about them. So no name, no age, no gender or anything like that. You just say, here's what this person thinks about these theological questions. Mm-hmm. Here's the experience that this person has. Mm-hmm. Who would you pick? And then do the same thing with candidates when you have all that other information. I think there's a lot of implicit bias that call committees bring to that process that we're just not aware of.
Yeah.
And that we don't realize. And it's not that that bias is bad, but it's that that bias can prevent us from seeing the God-given leadership qualities that might be present in someone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess it is that bias is bad if it's bad. now that I said it.
Yeah.
Well, I think we can just acknowledge that the bias exists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and that saying it's bad or good is tough to say, like, because it exists in every one of us.
Right.
And again, what one person may find attractive, and this is like what draws one person into a pastor would maybe discourage another person from being drawn in. You know, we can acknowledge these things, but they're all there. You know, these biases, these things that we find attractive, and this isn't just physically attractive, but this draw us in, you know, we can acknowledge, I have them when I listen to a speaker or read a book or listen to a podcast. These things are drawing me in. And we can acknowledge it's much harder for females to get over the hump of not being attractive.
Yeah.
And that I have biases attached to what I would be drawn to.
Mm-hmm.
And most of those biases are based on how does this person make me feel, you know, and not how is this person, how does this person, are they a good parent?
Mm-hmm.
Does that matter when I think about are they a good Christian leader?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it should. That's part of the biblical standard of good biblical leadership is good parent, good spouse. That's there. That's what Paul is first, you know, like, and so to say like those things really just, we don't really put a lot of stock into them when it comes to Christian leaders is really hard sometimes. Mm-hmm. Well, we're about to hire a senior pastor. Do we do it, you know, draw names out of a hat?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think you could do worse. Well, maybe you couldn't do worse. But you know, I think it would be an interesting experiment, right? What if you had a congregation? Actually, this is kind of how Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints does it, if I remember this correctly. That essentially, it's like a rotating position. Like, pastor is a rotating position.
Mm-hmm.
And you're kind of drawn out of a hat. Like, it's...
Yeah.
It's not drawn out of a hat, but it's kind of like that. And, you know, what would it be like to say, like, okay, we've got this congregation of people... And, you know, who thinks that they want to be the primary pastoral office holder for a period of time? And you draw a name out of a hat.
Yeah.
And see, I don't know. I mean, what if we did council elections that way? Maybe that'd be fascinating.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, potentially terrifying, but it could be, you know, it could be fascinating. No, I think that we, you know, as we look for pastors, we need to be aware of our own implicit biases. And we need to be aware of what we're bringing to the table in that process. Mm-hmm. And we need to be consciously asking ourselves and others if those are getting in the way of seeing something else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it also reminds us that, like, sometimes the people who are most looking for prestige and power and are most driven to achieve those things are the people we least want to have that position.
Yeah.
But will feel most attractive to that position. Not just physically attractive, but because of their energy and their desire for that position, you will be drawn into that.
Right.
And that can be misleading.
Yeah. I think also there's a money component, too, that I think we have to acknowledge with the church as well, because it does tend to get run like a business, I think, in the modern era. So I think there's also an implicit bias of, like, who are they bringing in the door? You know, are they bringing in more offerings and donations? Maybe not for a bad reason, you know, maybe so we can, you know, improve our ministry. But there's that aspect of it, too.
Yeah, sure.
I can certainly say when it came to, like, who's coming to the door, Jesus was not super concerned about that. His ministry was kind of the same when he had 50,000 people showing up to listen to him, and the exact same when all those people went away.
Well, that's like, integrity, right? I mean, that's you are who you are regardless of, you know, who's listening.
Yeah, and I think there have been some great pastoral leaders throughout history who have done that, right? Like, I mean, I didn't know Billy Graham personally. I didn't know his, I never watched his crusades or anything, but what I've read about his life and about his ministry, he strikes me as that, like, this is who I am. And the fact that I'm going to a stadium of 5,000 or 30,000 people doesn't change if I'm talking to five people. Like, this is who Billy Graham is. Now, Billy Graham's son's kind of wackadoo, but, you know, Billy Graham himself, I think, is one that I'd say, like, I think that we had.
There was integrity.
Yeah,
there
was integrity there. Yeah. And I would not have, I don't know, I only knew Billy Graham in his older days, but I would not have looked at Billy Graham and said, oh, you're
a cracker. Two thumbs up.
So this is, this kind of article ends with this quote from Tim Keller. Tim Keller is a pastor in New York.
We've talked about him before. Yes, we did our Justice podcast.
And a megachurch pastor. Mm-hmm. The church he pastors in New York is a big, big church. I think 2,000 is kind of the barrier. After that, you become a megachurch.
And there's actually another level up above that called, like, altar church or something. There's another one. I don't remember what it is, but
Yeah, so so he kind of said this about Christian humility. True gospel humility means I stop connecting every experience and every conversation with myself. In fact, I stop thinking about myself. And I think that this is probably what would be most drawing, because I think Tim Keller is not an attractive hottie like Carl Lentz might be.
Yeah.
He's not necessarily a bad-looking guy, but, I mean, he's an old man now. I mean, he's bald. He's in his 60s or 70s, and he's still pastoring a giant congregation, not because he's hip or cool or he has tattoos and he rolls his sleeves up, or not because he's hanging out with Justin Bieber. You know, like, these are not the things. But I think why people are drawn to him is because they are drawn to his character in New York, that is what is drawing them in. And it's easy to be drawn into a person who's not concerned about themselves. That's an incredibly attractive kind of human being. This person who comes in and has stopped wishing that the eyes were on them. They stopped thinking, what can I add to the conversation? They stopped thinking, I'm just waiting for you to stop talking so I can share what I'm really going to say. Right. Oh, I've heard your story. Let me share a better one, because this one has me at the center of it. You know, like, that's an attractive person. This person who stopped looking to connect every experience to themselves, but looking to connect every experience to Jesus, just feels like a Christian leader. And I think that's why Tim Keller has risen, because I've heard his sermons. He's not really a super dynamic guy. But
he's Presbyterian, right?
He's Presbyterian.
I can say that because I grew up Presbyterian.
but what he has to share and say is really powerful for the people of New York.
Or anywhere, frankly, not just New York.
But
this is a passing thought, but I do wish that church was more about the community and less about the pastor. Because even though we're talking about how Tim Keller is not a hottie per se, we're still talking about who he is as a person, drawing people into the church versus the church and the gospel drawing people in. So, and that's not a fully fleshed out thought, but it just kind of struck me.
I think
that's
a valuable point. I think that probably is another element of what is so meaningful about Tim Keller's church, which I forget the name of his church, but doesn't matter.
Redeemer.
I think it's what's powerful about a Redeemer versus, for me at least, about a Hillsong or something like that, that there is, there seems to be more an element of community. And certainly because, I mean, you know, Redeemer's a Presbyterian church, so they would follow the Presbyterian practices of having the, what is it, the board? It's not called a church council. They call it something else, but elders or something like that.
Elders and deacons.
Elders and deacons. And so you have kind of some of that polity that comes along with that. And that, I mean, some of that structure also helps eliminate some of the things that happen with, you know, Carl Lentz or something like that as well. Right? I mean, it's much harder for me as a, you know, one of the things that came up about Carlin is he's gone for like months at a time and then would like come back and preach and then would like disappear again. And, huh. you know, what I mean, there's no structure really in place to like prevent something like that. Yeah. There's all sorts of things that would keep Tim Keller or myself or something right. who are in these larger denominational bodies. There are lots yeah. of things that would keep us from doing that.
Yeah.
And yep. those are to protect us as much as to protect the church yep. and the congregation as well. And so, yeah, I think when congregations are truly thriving, you know, and this for me is that the real heart of a thriving congregation is that you can see a really dynamic and meaningful leader leave and the church continues to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you know a church is truly healthy and thriving, is when the church continues to thrive after a really dynamic, powerful leader leaves.
I think that's a good place to end on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, where can you find us? Unless somebody else has anything to say.
No, I'm good.
Yes.
Yeah, hey, so if you liked this episode, and if you want to tell us about your favorite hot pastor stories, no, we don't want to hear those.
No, I want to hear them.
You can tell us your favorite stories about pastors that you like. Yeah, just what do you like about your pastors? You can tell us those. You can email us at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. You can find all of our episodes going all the way back to 2018.
Wow.
Yeah, years ago now. You can find all of our episodes at beyondsundaypodcast.com.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.